Hey friend, I'm Sarah, and welcome to the Nerd's Guide to Financial Independence podcast. I am here to show you that financial independence can be for anyone who wants it badly enough, and that investing in real estate doesn't have to be scary, take a vast DIY knowledge, or involve heaps of debt. When I am not sharing my own progress to FI, I'll be picking the brains of fellow like-minded, debt-conscientious investors. I am so glad that you are here, my fellow aspiring retirees. Hey guys, sorry for the interruption, but I really wanted to come on here and talk to you about the management program that I use to manage my real estate properties. And it is called Avail. If you have not heard me talk about it, I'm extremely obsessed with it because it is like cozy on steroids. So I do all of my tenant screening through there. I can do background checks, I can do criminal checks, I can do eviction record reports. You can have the tenants pay for their own background checks. And you can also push your advertisement for your properties out on various platforms. And once you get it listed, people can apply. You can add custom questions to your pre-screen. And then once they're in, you know, the system and you've chosen your tenant, they can do all their rent collection through there. They can put their security deposits in. They can show proof of insurance. And my absolute favorite part, which is really hard to find, is it is a one-stop shop because I can do all of my lease forms electronically. Goodbye paper. This is my favorite thing, especially as a real estate investor that has aspirations to be a passive investor. I want it all to be able to be handled on my phone. And I can do that with Avail, which is awesome. So if you want to check it out, I highly recommend pop over to Instagram, go in my bio, click on the link, and right at the top, you're going to see my favorite, you know, landlord software right at the top called Avail. Please go check it out.
Hey everybody, it's Sarah. I'm here with Felipe Mejia tonight, and we are talking real estate, how I think he has some questionable investing practices, and we'll get into all the fun things tonight. But me and Felipe are buddies, and we've kind of followed each other for a while now, like a year. And so I think I actually met Ashley first, was originally your co-host, and then we got connected kind of through the Bigger Pockets thing, but then we've just remained friends. So he pushes me out of my comfort zone. So we are going to remain buddies. And I kind of watched this little mastermind group that's pretty awesome. So we're going to talk about all the things today. And you have some really exciting things coming out in 2021, which we'll get to. So I'm going to give you like a moment to do some shameless plugs at the end for yourself and the awesome things you're doing. But it's going to be an exciting year. So
it is. I agree 100%. Thanks for having me on your show.
Yes.
Super excited to be here. I remember interviewing you. You were super shy. You had to open up. But yeah, my investing strategies are a little different. It's probably because of the lack of education, but I know that I'm also where I'm at because of that, if that makes sense.
I absolutely love your real estate investing strategy. We'll get into the only thing you do that I don't significantly love. It's hilarious. So it's like our love to make fun of each other for investing advice. Yes. But real estate, I originally got really excited about your plan because we started calling it like jokingly, like the Felipe special, did the same routine where you switched a single family home into a two unit. And that's really how I got my house hack going, was I stopped searching the MLS and stopped searching online and Facebook Marketplace for, you know, duplexes and multi-units. And I started looking for single family homes that could be converted, and it totally broadened my options. And so maybe we'll kind of take them back and just talk about how you got started. So I'm always very impressed. You have a son too running around. So I always like when people are like doing this, like crushing life with little kids. How old is your son now?
So Armando is now 3, and you're right. Like, yeah. I love all these real estate investors that are like, oh, I work really hard and like, I never sit still. And you know, I'm not watching Netflix. So like, give me a high five because I don't watch Netflix and I invest in real estate. And I'm like, dude, you like don't have any responsibilities. It's easy for you to invest in real estate.
Right. If you had all the time.
And Felipe, we have kids and we invest in real estate.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Like when Sloan was, I think I was like the throes of my renovation and she was 16 months old and I was like sanding and she's like covered in dust. I'm like, sorry, this is where we are tonight. How did your journey kind of start? What got you into real estate?
Yeah. So real estate for me began because my parents got divorced, and in like Latino culture, whatever, like the man makes the money and like the wife stays home with the kids. And the more I'm growing up, like the more I'm learning, it's not as bad as people think. because it's more optional. But anyways, so parents got divorced, dad left, all the money went with it. And like, yeah, my mom got the house, but with that is a mortgage. Right. Everyone's like, oh, the woman gets the house. And it's like, yeah, but like, that's a mortgage too. Like that's not right. just free.
And insurance and property taxes. And
all that. So what my mom did was, she kind of spent like the last couple $1,000 that we had, and basically built out our basement, so one room at a time. And with that, she was able to pay the mortgage. So I always explain it to people, like basically when our parents got divorced, we stayed with my mom, but we really felt like if you're in a pool and the water is like right at your throat, like you know, you're okay, but you're kind of floating on your tippy toes. Any large wave, you know, is going to like take you out.
Yeah.
So what we did with real estate was we converted our basement, and all of a sudden now the water was at our belly. Like we're not out of the water yet,
yeah.
But okay, we got a little bit more playroom, right?
You like can breathe a little bit easier.
Exactly. So I saw the power in real estate with that starting out.
Yeah. And I think that's so inspiring because everyone's watched me get divorced this year and I like shamelessly just talk about it, but I'm like, I'm so inspired because you had such a strong mom. And so I was really excited to talk about this and I was hoping we'd go this way because I think it's such an important message. Is I think people are like, oh, I got divorced, so I can't. And people just have all these excuses. And I think you and I talk a lot about mindset too, that people have. And your mom's like, you know, it kind of goes out of necessity. Like I would have never done like private money with my house hack if you didn't have necessity, but it like makes you so resilient to go through such hard experiences. And I don't want people to ever use it as an excuse. And I think we're both kind of in that mindset wavelength of like, you need to not have excuses because you like you have little kids, you grew up with a single mom and you're just doing awesome things. So walk us through like your first property from there.
Sure. Absolutely. And before we go there, I'm just going to say like your daughter will one day be interviewing somebody or be interviewed and she'll say the same thing. She'll be like, look, my mom started, you know, our billion-dollar industry that we have now by a house hack that she did while I was, you know, 18 months getting sawdust on me. So like, it's just the, it's that like, you know, fight or flight mentality and, you know, single moms that are crushing in real estate or even just women in general that have kids. I'm like, man, kudos. Cause I know it's not easy.
So, you watched her grind and work her butt off and
absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. So you also get major brownie points for saying that. Yeah. I'll keep you around.
I guess we can be friends another 6 months.
So where did you go from there?
Yeah. So my first rental property was actually a mobile home that my mom gifted to me. And with that mobile home came one renter, Victor, the painter. I don't know. I think people
know
the painter from my Instagram. He's still with me to this day.
If you do not know who Victor the painter is, go check out Felipe's Instagram.
He does all my jobs. I love it. Anyway, so yeah, Victor the painter has been my first tenant and is still my tenant after years and years. I think I've calculated, I think he's paid me almost like over $100,000 in rent by now, if I'm not mistaken. Like it's been a lot of money. Anyway, so he came with the mobile home that my mom gifted me from high school. So when I graduated high school, most people were getting cars, rings, college tuitions paid for, whatever. Like my mom handed me a mobile home and a renter and was like, you know, that's what I got.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, that sucks. Now I'm like, oh my gosh, my mom's giving me like 100 G's.
All the real estate investors are like, that's the best gift you could have ever given someone. And then it's like,
exactly.
Like the 16-year-old or 17-year-old you're like, what the heck, mom?
What am I doing with a mobile home, mom? Seriously. Yeah. And then for there, it just kind of snowballed from there, to be honest. You know, I have the crazy mobile home story, that was flooded in 2010.
I don't think I know that one.
Really?
I haven't heard the flooded mobile home story.
This is a really good one. So, yep, drink your coffee. This is going to be great. You're going to love this.
It's very important.
It's very important.
Single parenting. So much coffee.
I was able to buy my second mobile home and I was going to rent it out, but I had to fix it up. Now, the story is I was driving home one day and literally like I was driving home, saw my mobile home, kept driving on my way to my mom's house because I was going to get breakfast, Saturday morning breakfast. And on my same mobile home park, there was a lot 6 and like something in my spirit was like, hey, you should go look at this property and buy it. And I was like, yeah, right. God, like I don't have any money. 2, like this property, like I can't afford it and it looks run down. Like that's not gonna happen. Drove by it. Next weekend, came home from college. Same thing. I really felt my spirit. Like I really felt like the Lord was like, hey, you should buy this house. And I was like, I don't have money. Like what the heck's going on? as you might know by now, ended up buying the property, right? Mm-hmm. Like nickel and diming and borrowing or whatever. Ended up buying this property.
How much did you have to buy? Or like how much did you have to like scratch together?
Oh, I borrowed all of it, like 100% debt. Like it was terrible, absolutely terrible.
No, but I feel like people want to know how they got started. Like people, like I think this is the part that like newbies miss because you're just like, I don't understand how to buy something.
Sure. Okay. And so this is what I did. The mobile home was $3,000. I went to my mom and asked for $2,000 and then I worked for another $1,000.
Yeah. Because like my house hack, I'm like, I had money that got me like a third of my renovation and then I just put it on credit cards. So here we are.
And that's what you got to do.
Yeah. Because you're just like, you're in it deep and you just feel like you're having this moment where like, I'm going to do this. Like you just have this time where you're like, I'm all in, we're going to buy this house. So.
I agree 100%. And sometimes I think there is a point in every person's career, and I'll get back to the story, but I think there is a point in everyone's career where they got to risk it all. And if you remind me, I will talk about my risking it all moment and how it paid off.
So, I will write that down.
Okay. So the mobile home. Okay. So I got the mobile home, $3,000, and I was going to start fixing it up. And I really got to prayer and I was like, Lord, now what? Like, what am I supposed to do now? Mm-hmm. Now that I have this mobile home, I ain't got no money to fix it. And I didn't have any credit cards back then. I was like, what am I supposed to do now? And I really just felt like, okay, start like knocking down walls and start tearing things down that you're supposed to, like just start the demo process. Right. That's free. Okay, great. I did. Yeah.
When in doubt, tear things apart. It'll make you feel better.
Just start tearing things apart. So I ended up putting flooring in the master bedroom because I was going to move into the property and work on it while on the weekends in college. So I did, my stepfather laid flooring. So I asked him for some carpet. I laid the carpet and I was going to sleep in there. I had a mattress on the floor. Easy. Mm-hmm. So what I did was, I ended up fixing that. I brought all my college books home the weekend of the floods. And then in May 2010, the Nashville floods hit and Nashville got flooded.
Yeah. Oh, so for people that don't know, you're based out of Nashville.
I am based out of Nashville.
Which is a good thing because a lot of people complain about hot markets and Nashville is a hot market. And we'll dive into that a little bit. It's a little crazy. Like, it's not like the high cost of living-ish. Like, you're up there, but the market is ridiculous there.
Yeah.
Like, properties go in a minute.
Mm-hmm, 100%. There's not enough inventory or good inventory anyways. So what we did was we bought it. I ended up fixing one room and I was going to start working on the rest. So I started demoing and then the May floods hit. And then my mobile home had water up to about halfway through the living room. So you could see the watermark all the way around where it got flooded. And I was like super upset because I didn't have like insurance on it or anything, right? Like everything wrong in real estate. And I was like, oh crap, like that's $3,000. Like that's my forever. Like I'm going to be broke until I'm 50. Like that was my whole life. And I remember my mom telling me to go to the mobile home because FEMA was out there evaluating damages, like FEMA representatives.
Yep. Yeah.
And he was like, hey, are you the owner of this house? Like, I just so happened to like pull up when FEMA guy was like walking to the property.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah. Like that's my house. Like, you know, it got destroyed. You know, I'm a college student. My books are in there. Like, he could literally see my books on the floor. He was taking pictures. Mm-hmm. And he was like, so this is your personal resident. I was like, yeah, like that was one thing that I did right. Like by then I had put it under as my personal resident. Mm-hmm. And then what happened was he told me, he's like, all right, thanks. Like, that's all I need to know. And then he left and I never saw him again. And I never spoke to anybody from FEMA ever again. So it was super scary. Like he took my name down, my social security number, just random information. And then was like, all right, thanks. Like that was it. And I was like, okay, great. Never talked to him again. Didn't get his business card, nothing. And then like 2 weeks later, bills were due. Like the mobile home was still sitting on the lot. So you still have to pay a lot fee.
Right.
So I went and checked the mail and I was like, great, just bills. So I was like, bill, water bill, electric bill, you know, insurance bill, whatever. And I was like, okay, great. And then a government bill came in, but like, I don't know if you ever gotten a tax return. It came in one of those and I was like, oh, cool. Okay. Maybe I get some tax money, but so I opened it up and I don't have a receipt here, but like, you know, those envelopes that have like that clear plastic part.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
The clear plastic window. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those. And I like opened it and I could see the check number and like, I didn't read it. So like at first part, I pulled it. And I saw a 3 and a 0 and I was like, oh my God, they sent me $30. Like, yes, that's amazing. And then I kept pulling it. And then it was like, no, it was $300. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, I can pay the lot fee for a month. I'm like, great. Like I got another month under my belt.
Yeah.
And then I kept pulling it and then it was $3,000. And then I started shaking because I was like, oh my gosh, they gave me what I paid for the mobile home, and I saw $3,000, and I'm like freaking out, and I'm like shaking, and like, I don't know what's going on. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like $3,000. And then I take it out and it's 30 grand.
So, you're like, this is more money than I've had in my life.
Oh my gosh.
Do you like cash it really quick to make sure it was real?
Oh my gosh. No, I ran to the bank and absolutely. So, but I was like, holy crap. So what he did was, later I found out that he gave me the value of the mobile home the day it was bought.
Oh.
So somebody bought that mobile home for 30 grand.
That's crazy.
And I was like, oh my God, I was freaking out. I didn't know what to do. I remember telling my mom. That's what I did. I remember calling my mom right then and there. And I was like, what do I do? Like, what happened? And she's like, well, why'd you buy it, you know, in the first place? And I was like, well, I really felt like God was telling me to buy this property, fix it up and get it ready. And he's like, and she was like, okay, well, great. Because now God has provided, you know, for you to be able to fix this property. And I was like, oh, okay, that makes sense. Duh. So I put the money in the bank. I used the money to fix the property, and we still have that property to this day. That's awesome. And we rent it out still to this day.
Very cool.
Yeah. So that's my mobile home story.
Yes. That's such a good story. That's good. Like, you definitely have these like God moments throughout the year. Like, I've definitely had a few of those along the way where, I don't know, I just feel like when you start living your life in a certain way, like good things come to you. Like when you're kind of like listening and paying attention and being aware, like, yeah, good, like blessings start coming to you. It's interesting. Absolutely. There's a really good verse that my electrician quoted me that I can't remember now because people are so eloquent about it. And I'm like, I know nothing. I'm like, something about like good things happen to people. I would love to be one of those people that is like so good at citing verses, and I'm just not.
I was never that way either. I wasn't good at remembering. I can remember if stuff is in the Bible. Like, I'm like, yeah, I know it's there. Let me Google it and I got you. But I was never able to remember.
Right. Yes. Okay. Stay. So that was, so your first house and second house, we got those. And then the giant flood. And then after that, were you like, when did you get hooked on real estate? Like, were you just like going for it after that? Or
no. Oh God, no. After that, I wanted to be a police officer. Like, I had my own personal visions that I thought.
Right.
But I knew, I didn't want to accept that I knew that like there was different plans for my life, whether I knew it or not. I like didn't want to accept it.
Right.
So I ended up going all in real estate. And earlier we talked about how I think there's a pivot moment for most real estate investors. I think you just had yours, right? Where you're like credit card buying, like it's either you're all in or you're
because not. Because I used to listen to Bigger Pockets and was terrified and didn't like it and stopped listening to it for a while because people were so debt loving and people would talk, like I would just stop listening to podcasts and they said they put stuff on a credit card and it just freaked me out because I'm like, Dave Ramsey just got me out of debt. Like, I don't want to listen to this. And then I realized, like, once you do a few properties, you see like the magic of real estate and you see the tax benefits and you see it like working. And then all of a sudden you become a single income household. You're the sole provider for your daughter. And you're like, okay, it's time to get serious about this because this is going to be my way to like build my future. And so at that point you go all in and you don't care what you take debt out on. You're just like, YOLO, like this is the dream. Like, here we are. Like, this is how it's going to happen because I can get myself to live for free if I throw everything I have into this basement remodel and you just go for it. And I think that's like your all in moment you were talking about, like the risking it all. You're like, I like leveraged myself as much as I could to finish that remodel and get someone in it. And it's kind of crazy.
Do you have someone in it?
Yes. Yeah. As of November.
Are you
November 1st? Very close. So I just got my refinance, some refiing out of it. And I think my mortgage will be $1,400 and my rent's $1,300. So I'm so close. Yeah.
You're going to be living for $100 a month.
Yeah. In a $310,000 house.
You are okay.
Gonna make it.
Yeah.
And that is like, I pay for all the utilities because I don't have, since it's a single family home that was converted, the utilities are included, but it's also a 2-bedroom that I'm getting over $1,000 a month for, like feeling pretty good about it.
You're crushing the dream. And like I said, we all have that like all in moment. And this is something that I don't hear much on podcasts. And a lot of people don't talk about it because it's maybe a little embarrassing and probably even a little like, not probably the right way to do it. But I think every real estate investor has that like all in or not all in moment.
But I think this is what people don't talk about that people are missing. Like, they don't talk about the early days when you like suck yourself dry. I don't like, I try to talk about like, I've drained my bank account so many times. Like, I think every time I buy a house, I just empty them. And then I'm like, I have $400 to buy groceries with this month. My net worth might be $200,000, but I have $400 to buy groceries this month. And that's not unusual around here. So yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Like for me, it was, so here's my all-in moment for your listeners to kind of get a little bit of background on myself. Before I was bankable, I had 2 years of work history that I had to do because I was self-employed. Mm-hmm. So this is I'll preface it this way. Most people are like, oh, I want to quit my W-2 job. I usually tell people, don't quit your W-2 job and use it as a way to get loans. Because when you quit your W-2 job and go self-employed, like I did, I had to wait 2 years before I could get a loan, even hard money and stuff like that. Like it was really, really hard.
Yep. And I think people don't realize that. So like being bankable is a thing that you need to be mindful of when you're starting out, because people just want to like dive all into real estate.
Yes.
And so like, I also am like, well, I have a good W-2 and I'm like, do not give that up. Like, do not jump all in yet. Like you can build and you can not sleep for a few years and figure it out. Like, but don't lose that W-2 yet, because you can be building your rental portfolio on the back end. So then when you quit your job, you have 2 years of tax returns on your business.
So I'm going to give you a little hack here. I think you're going to like this. Yeah. I think people should create their LLC while they still have a W-2 job, mm-hmm. and start running money through the LLC to start proving that there's money going in and out, right. and then giving themselves that 2 year timeline to quit their job while their LLC is becoming bankable, and at the same time acquiring loans through your W-2 job for the next 2 years, potentially 4 to 6, if you do it the right way.
Yep.
Then that should give you the opportunity to quit your job, so that when you do quit, you continue to be bankable because your LLC has been formed for 2 years, i.e. you can now get loans in your LLC's name. So I think that's the perfect way to do it.
If you're just starting out and you didn't understand that, rewind and listen to that again, because that's exactly how I did it, but I learned from a smarter person than I am. And so, yeah. So when I kind of haphazardly got there. So we started out buying 3 properties and bought them in our own name. And then we formed the LLC right away. And it was out of necessity because my ex-husband like had so many DUIs, we couldn't get a umbrella policy. Like we couldn't get good insurance on our rentals. And I'm like, this is terrible. So we need to do something to protect ourselves. And so right away we formed an LLC and we did quick claim deeds and transferred all the houses into the LLC. So then by the time we got to the 4th house, we could get like commercial lending and go through banks and do portfolio loans, because we had our LLC and all the expenses run through it for 2 years. So it was kind of like an accident that we got there. And then I learned about it from someone. Did the banks
not call your loans by any chance?
No. So I called all of them. So I called all my mortgage people and I said, hey, we bought this house as our, you know, one of them was our personal residence. 2 of them were for rentals. And so I'm like, we're going to transfer these in LLC. Are you going to like call my loan if I transfer it? And they all said no. And I asked to get it in writing. And then, yeah, like it was, I think $400 each time. So that's how we did. Yeah. So that's how we like got started with like becoming bankable, but it's like, then that was more like to get the portfolio loan later and to protect ourselves legally because of the lack of like really quality insurance. And so that was kind of a layer of protection. But also from your standpoint, if you're a person sitting there being like, I just want to quit my job, think about that strategy also, because then you have so many different loan options once you get that 2 years of like being bankable. So that's definitely a valid way to go.
So. I 100% agree with that. I think that's a really smart strategy. And whether you fell into it or not, I think I think a lot of people should rewind that and like do that exact same thing. Like create your LLC while you have a W-2 job, and that's okay. And yeah, I think that's great. So back to my all-in moment. So in my all-in moment. No, you're good. No, that was great.
I'm a little ADD. Sorry, everyone. Hopefully you're following along.
No, that was great. In my all-in moment, what I did was, so we were in the middle of our 2 years of trying to get bankable. And I just saved up a bunch of cash, and mm-hmm. just being the investor that I am, I was like, man, I don't want to be sitting on 60, 70 grand, in the bank. I need to do something. So I remember like, I was like, okay, I know everything, in regards to like, or I've listened to every podcast. I've read every book. Like I can do this. Like I'm ready to do this. And I remember seeing a condo for sale in, Nashville that was 50 grand. And I had mm-hmm. $60,000, and it was 50 grand, and it was renting for $900. So great returns.
Yeah.
And I decided to go for it, and I bought it cash. And I had like, I think after it was set down, I had like $6,000 in the bank left.
Mm-hmm.
And I was newly married. I had a mortgage. I had a job. My wife had a job. But like we were buying this rental property, and I was like, look, I would rather lose $50,000 or 60, whatever it was, out of my own money than do it on a loan and ruin my credit, my history, like just ruin everything. Mm-hmm. And that was my all-in moment. I was like, you know what? I'm just going to buy it cash. I'm going to, the next day I had like $7,000 in the bank.
Yeah.
And a $900 check. And I was like, wow, yep. Only real estate investors are willing to like spend $60,000 for, you know, an $800 check.
Yep.
Terrible. Now,
how did your wife think this is a good idea?
Oh my God.
Like bless her, because you guys, you do some risky things and I think it's hilarious. She does a lot of the behind the scenes stuff that people don't know about. We'll talk about her part of the business.
Let's get into that. My wife is a saint, but she also is like, obviously she's the closest woman to me. So she saw me analyze that property for about 5 nights straight. Mm-hmm. And we can get into Bitcoin later, but she also saw me like analyze that for months on end before I got in. So she was like, look, just do it because you've really been on this property for the past, you know, bunch of nights and it looks like, you know, I think you're going to be okay. And we were on the other side of it. We ended up selling it for 65. Mm-hmm. So we made like $14,000 in a year, which is great.
Yeah.
Cash flowed the whole time, which is great. Never had a lapse in rent. And then we rolled that money into the next deal and then into the next deal and then so forth and so on. So that property snowballed into what we have now.
Yes. Okay. So where are you at now? Like how many units do you have? And you have, are all of them duplexes now or do you still have?
Nope. They're all duplexes. So let me ask you this. How do you count your house?
As a single one unit?
No, your house is two units.
Two units.
Yeah. Cause
yeah, it's about, but I'm just in one of them, I guess.
Yeah. But I'm saying as a rental portfolio, when you move out, it's a two unit.
It's a two unit. Like unit. The goal is to move out in a year. So.
And then it's two units, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
do you count my unit now?
Where you live?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. It adds to your net worth.
Huh. Interesting.
How do you count it?
I hadn't been counting the one I lived in because I figured like once I move out of it, then it'll be like a unit and count.
I won't count my forever home.
Yeah.
This is even still a rental property.
Right. Yeah.
So, okay. So
because I used to count my primary residence that was going to become a rental as one of our houses, like towards the portfolio. So I guess I would count this as a second unit.
There you go.
I'm going to go update my Instagram bio to include an extra door now.
There you go. Go add a door. We have 19 units and one out of state unit.
Okay. I didn't know you had an out of state unit. Mm-hmm. Is that new?
Well, I'm closing Friday.
Nice. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Very nice. Mm-hmm. So growing. And so they're all, is that one also a duplex like the others?
No, that's just going to be a $37,000 purchase. It's going to rent for $650. Just boring.
Diversifying.
Yeah. Just diversifying.
Nice. So I learned about house hacking and buying single family homes. So talk about your, like, how did you figure out this model? Was it kind of from your mom pretty much? Mm-hmm. Like you learned about that strategy.
I just 10X'd it. So I wondered why she didn't keep going. Mm-hmm. And she said like, well, it was really hard because, you know, I had three kids. So like even just kudos to her, like doing one.
Right.
So then from there, I was like, oh,
that's okay. Farther than most people get.
Exactly. So I was like, maybe I can just do this on my own. That's what I ended up doing. I just got back to, let me tell the nitty gritty. So once I sold that condo, I bought a 6-unit apartment complex the third day I was bankable. bankable. And I was like, go.
Buying stuff. Yeah.
But I listened to Bigger Pockets talking about cash flow. Like, okay. So people don't know this, but Bigger Pockets basically goes in cycles. They were talking about cash flow for a while. And they talked about multifamily for a while. Mm-hmm. And then they talked about Burr strategy for a while. And right now they're on this mobile home trip. Mm-hmm. So there's like cycles to Bigger Pockets based on what Brandon's investing in. And I love the guy. He was on my mastermind yesterday. So
I saw that. That's awesome.
All love to Brandon. So I ended up selling the condo. Mm-hmm. They gave me like $75,000 cash. And what I did was I rolled that as the down payment to a 6-unit apartment complex in Cookeville, Tennessee. Mm-hmm. Boom, cash flowing $2,000 instantly. Ching. Yes.
Yeah. Did it.
Bad idea.
Yeah.
Bad idea. Terrible.
That's when you learned you don't like big multifamily or bigger, I guess.
That's when I learned my why. That's when I learned. So, okay, we got past the all in stage.
Yep.
Right. Mm-hmm. And now we're in the why is Felipe doing this stage.
Right.
Okay.
You had like a soul searching moment a little bit.
Yes. I was going to pick up $2,000 every month. And I was like, this is great. but this is not what I want to do the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be involved as involved in my rental properties.
Right.
Okay. So I was like, this is
feels really, like a job. Did you have that yes. moment where you're like, this is a lot more work?
This was very hands-on.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, not liking this. Mm-hmm. The money is great. So this is where I tell people they need to figure out their why in regard and not use the word money. If you can figure out why you're investing in real estate without mentioning money, then you've made it. So I sold that property and it was cash flowing that much. And I rolled all that money into one single family home that I bought cash in Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah.
And this is where you don't like.
So what is that?
Well, I put the line of credit on it and now I use my line of credit too. But
no, so I love the line of credit. So because I think this is fascinating. So yes. I am like, so I don't have enough equity in anything to do a line of credit, but I love this strategy. So someday if I ever get enough, like I'm doing this. I like the idea of not putting on your primary residence, but I feel like I'm in the moving up the line in houses game right now. So
I didn't put any on my personal home either. I'm not going to risk where my family's roof, right. But I will risk a rental property. So what I did was I ended up selling that after a year and I bought it for $225 and I ended up selling it for $260.
Mm-hmm.
But remember I put almost $80,000 down and then I made another like $40,000 or $50,000 on the sale. So I was close to like $150,000 or $140,000 or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I had saved up another $50,000 from a flip that I did while renting that property.
Yes.
So I ended up with like $210,000 in the bank cash, almost $250,000. And I bought one house in Nashville cash that was cash flowing almost $2,000. So almost the same as the apartment complex, but one house paid off cash.
Yep.
So I was like 6 units apartment complex. Cash flowing the same amount as this house. Most people are like, no, because the apartments are going to go higher, yada, yada, yada. But my goal is the least amount of properties with the most amount of cash flow.
Right.
So
this is where people miss it sometimes with the shiny Instagram ads is like, does Felipe sound more exciting saying I have 6 units or does Felipe sound more exciting saying I have one single family home?
But they cash flow the same.
They cash flow the same, and which sounds like more work.
Exactly.
One group of humans or one roof and one door. And
yeah. It was like, I'm not going to do BRRRR. I'm not going to do 1%. I'm not going to check cash on cash, the 50% rule of the line of credit. Like, I'm not going to do all that. Like, what does Felipe need? Because at the end of the day, Brandon Turner is not picking up my checks or helping me work or your bigger pocket or any podcast that you're listening to. It's like, what works for Sarah? And then do that.
Right.
So that's what I did.
Yeah.
I bought a house cash. I bought it. I had a cash. It was giving me cash flow. I was like, fantastic. I then put a line of credit on it, which they gave me 80% of the value of the house on a credit. And now I just use that line of credit to buy rental properties. For example, I'll draw.
Yeah. So how big was that line of credit when you got it?
150.
So it'd be 150.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So now you have the $150,000 line of credit on an asset you bought cash. And then you can use. So line of credit is like beneficial because you don't have to like go to the bank every time and get financing. You can just like write it like a check.
Exactly.
That? Like how else do you, is there any other better way to explain it? I've never a line of credit did.
Yeah, no, that's it. You literally just call up the bank and say, hey, can you wire money here from that line of credit?
Yep.
And then, so like, for example, I'm going to wire that money from that line of credit to buy this Augusta, Georgia property.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm just going to refinance the property after 6 months, pay off my line of credit, and then I can reuse it for the next one.
Yep.
So
you're kind of recycling your own money.
Mm-hmm. And my return is going to be 100% because I don't have any money in the deal.
Right.
It'll be $200, $300 in cash flow every single month, free and clear.
So my dream is like for this house, it would be a really good house because I don't plan on living here forever. And it's an expensive enough house where I know I can get enough equity in it to be able to do a line of credit. Because I'm like, some of my other houses are like $90,000, like I have one that's like $62,000. Like they're cheap houses. And I'm like, it just isn't worth the effort to do a line of credit on something like that. But this guy's the one to like get that going. So I'm just stealing all of Felipe's ideas for my portfolio because it makes sense to me.
I would pay off your home.
Mm-hmm.
I would pay that house off that you have right now.
Yeah.
Get a line of credit on. And this is what people don't understand. Do you know that a line of credit does not affect your DTI?
No, I did not know that.
It doesn't.
I know my portfolio loans also do not. So your portfolio loans don't count against your DTI either.
Because they're an LLC, right?
Yep.
So yeah. you quick deeded them into an LLC.
And they're privately held. So like you can't find them. Like they're not sold on the secondary market like a conventional mortgage. So they're like, you can't search them. The bank holds them in house. And so no one can see like that you
have it. Did you refinance all those properties into the LLC?
Yep.
Yeah, that's great. That's perfect. Yeah. That's exactly what I would do.
Yeah. Which is great because then you're like, I have rental properties and the bank is like, really? And I'm like, yeah, you just have to call them. So it's fun fact about portfolio loans. But yeah, so I've done that whole deal, but that's what I'm thinking for this house is because this is also, so one of my really, really early mentors, because I was like fresh off of Dave Ramsey is like Mindful Money Coaches. You might not know them, but anyway, they're a good person to go follow, an account to go follow because they were like sneaky about it because they are like in like the later stages of life, like they're like in their 50s compared to some of us and they have like this big portfolio, but how they got started was a line of credit on their house. And they took out this big line of credit on this house that they like super overbuilt and then appreciated. And that's how they grew their portfolio so big, so quickly was a line of credit also. So when I heard you were also using them, I'm like, we need to talk about this because I want to learn more about how your strategy is because yeah, you were kind of in the throes of it more than they were and kind of fresh, like freshly using that line of credit still.
Yeah. So. I mean, like I said, I'm going to draw from my line of credit. I'm going to buy this $50,000 home or it's $37,000 home.
Then you don't have to go through the process like I'm going through right now where it's like, you want my firstborn and my kidney to like get me financing on this house with a conventional mortgage. You're just like, hey, wire my money that I've already open.
I'm going to wire 37 grand. 6 months down the road, I'm going to refinance that property. I'm going to pay off the line of credit and then I'm going to do it again.
And your interest rates on line credits are usually really good.
Like fours.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. Because your line of credit interest rate will be better than my portfolio loans interest rate.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
Yep.
And then I can
probably better than most people's secondary mortgage. Yeah.
Yeah. I can hard money. I can let people borrow it at rates. Mm-hmm. So it's fantastic. It's great.
Yeah. So that's a really good strategy. So we kind of talked about like the really nitty gritty of getting started, how we are sadly very pro leverage yourself to the max. If you are all in, if you know you're committed, don't do it. If you don't have a plan and don't do it for something stupid, like do it for rentals that you know cash flow. So what do you look for when you start looking at houses?
Sure. Absolutely. So I look for three ones that are above 1500 square feet. Mm-hmm. Anything above 1500 square feet is going to give me an extra bedroom somewhere. I gotta find it, but it's there.
Yeah.
And it has to have a full basement.
Mm-hmm.
So if
it has, does it have to be a walkout?
Walkout basement?
Yeah. Or like a garage under. You have a lot of like garages under that.
Garages.
House.
Yeah. My basements have to be either walkouts or garages.
Okay. Because there's very specific, like just a normal like basement fully underground is like not gonna fly. It has to have like openings.
Yeah, it does.
In it.
It does. So. For it to be, you know, put on the internet to rent out as a bedroom, it has to have a window, mm-hmm. or you can just call it a multi-purpose room and then people mm-hmm. can use it as they want. If it doesn't have a window. So for me, I put windows in the rooms, where the garage doors are at, i.e. two garage doors, two windows, two rooms. So pretty simple. If it doesn't have a window, it's just a multi-purpose room where they can use it as they need.
Mm-hmm.
I think what you did was really cool. And I never thought of that before, where you split a window with a wall.
Yeah.
And I was like, what is that gonna look like? And it actually doesn't look bad at all.
It doesn't look bad at all, but everyone was terrified when I'm like, see this window? I'm cutting this in half.
Were you nervous?
Yes, because I was like, I'm all in, I'm leveraged, like here we go. Like I have to be the hype man of my own parade because my life is just in shambles right now and everyone's looking at me like I'm crazy and I'm like, I have to believe in me because I don't want to scare everyone around me that's investing in this project.
What did your tenant say?
Nothing.
I think
like at the end I walked them through and I'm like, oh yeah, I like added this wall. And they're like, this wall? I'm like, yeah, the big one in the middle of the room. Like it doesn't feel like you added it because they don't know what it looked like before.
Yep.
So
that's
amazing. It's slightly awkward with the fireplace. Like I probably could have done a better job boarding that up. You can look at pictures. Do you always add a third bedroom or do you just keep it a two bed? Like do you add the third like multi-purpose room?
So the third bedroom is always the den.
Mm-hmm.
So if it has a two-car garage, I know it's going to be a deal for me. If it has a two-car garage and a den, I'm overpaying for it. Like I just am because I want that house because of that extra bedroom, which puts me just over the edge. That's another $300 in cash flow.
Exactly. So because how I did mine is a two-bedroom with a den as well.
Mm-hmm. What are your tenants using the den as?
She like knits and she does it like a sewing, like crafting room. You also care about like the slope of the plumbing, which I think is more of a Nashville thing specifically, because yes. That matters so, more because of like the mountains and hills and things. Yes.
So let's talk about that. So I had a plumber tell me, hey, Felipe, when you buy properties, just remember shit doesn't float up. And I was like, what? That's stupid. And then I bought a property that I needed the shit to float up.
Does the plumbing matter on a house hack? Like you want hot and cold and waste in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
Mine, mm-hmm. I cheated because I had a full kitchen and a bathroom already and downstairs laundry. So I'm like, this is like this gravy.
That was a no brainer. Mm-hmm. Aside from a sump pump to push the water to the waste, that's really it. And that's really simple. You just buy a $500 sump pump, put it in the ground, connect it to the waste. And it. Mm-hmm.
How do you do your utilities on your houses?
Same way you're doing. I pay all the bills.
Yep. And it's then just, do you just like do higher rent for them or?
It's the same, $450 a room. My goal is always.
You do buy the room also.
I do some houses by the room, yes. I'm starting to accept that I like my homes that have a family upstairs and a family downstairs more than rentals
mm-hmm.
by the room. But my by the rooms cash flow a lot more. And it's not a lot more time.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of on the fence. And I decided to leave it for now because I'm not spending more or any less time. So if I ended up with a whole house upstairs or downstairs that was empty, then I would put a family in it. I wouldn't go back to renting by the room.
Yeah.
But I think for now it's fine.
Why do you like families, do you think?
Less maintenance.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because otherwise you get like construction crews that just like.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to give you a quick tip here. One of the things that I've noticed with renting by the room versus renting with a family, and a lot of people don't think about this, is your air filters. My air filters with my rent by the rooms are very dirty and I change them once a month.
Interesting.
Instead of with a family. And that's important because if you don't change your air filters on time, your AC is going to get froze up.
So, I experienced that this year. Froze my air conditioner.
Mm-hmm. So
my subcontractors that didn't know what they were doing might have filled my furnace with insulation.
Oof, that sounds terrible.
It was awesome. So okay. Happy. And then it's me like climbing in my furnace to like suck it all out. And then we kicked it on and it's like, does it smell like a bonfire in here? Just a little bit.
Just a small bit.
But my furnace guy is like on the phone with me. Like I have a furnace guy that'll let me call him and ask questions. Like he's a saint. And I'm like, he's like, it'll smell like burning, but if you see flames, you need to turn it off right away and have someone next to the button. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is life. I'm like, I was like, mom, don't tell dad, but I'm going to need you to come over and I'm going to need you to help me turn on this furnace and watch for flames. And she's like, watch for what? I'm like,
just come over,
just come over and don't ask questions. Here's a fire extinguisher.
I can't wait to hear your dating stories because like, what are you going to talk about? You're going to talk about this story with the guy across the table. You're going to be like,
yeah,
so this one time my mom came over and I almost burned the house.
It's fine.
And it's okay.
And she's like, it smells like a bonfire. I'm like, he said it would. It's okay. As long as there's not like fire, we're okay.
That's so funny.
Yeah. I'm like, I don't know if people will be excited or think I'm nuts. So I guess that's how you'll know it's the one. Like, are you totally freaked out by this? Because I work a full-time job. I have a toddler and
that
I try to light my house on fire this year accidentally.
No, you'll know he's the one when he replies with, oh my gosh, you should have done it this way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Take me now.
God. Have you ever done any short-term rentals? I don't know if I've ever asked you this.
I have. A lot of people. Yeah, good question. People haven't asked me that before. I have, yeah. And I've done very well in it. When I first got, when me and my wife were dating, she mm-hmm. had a, not a condo. What is it called? A townhome.
Yep.
And, we Airbnb'd her townhome while we were, so this is really interesting. So like,
yeah.
Okay. So obviously, you know, we're believers. And so when we were getting married, we weren't living together, but there was that awkward time while we were engaged to get married where we were moving all our stuff like from one house to the other. So I had a house and she had a house and we were buying a house together.
Oh yeah. So, like how many houses can we get?
So
probably bought yours to be an investment, I would guess.
Yes. Okay. So we were Airbnb-ing her house, moving her stuff into the new house. She had to stay at my house while we were Airbnb-ing her house because we were buying the new house. And it was like, okay, we're going to have to like put all the church people aside for a minute. So she lived with me while we were engaged.
Mm-hmm. Did you tell anyone?
Exactly. I'm sure people found out, but like there was
now just, the whole world knows. So thank you. No.
Yeah. But does that kind of make sense? Do you yes. visualize it? Yeah. So yes. we were like trying to figure all that out.
It was like Jenga in a way, because you're like, okay, well you have to be out of your house because we need to Airbnb it, because we need to like get that going. But yes. then this new house is being like that's yes. happening.
But we're getting the new house. So we need
to. And it never happens the order you hope it is. It's always like one closes earlier than the other. And you're like, can I be like a multi-day, like magically yeah. everything switches, but it doesn't work that way.
So we ended up living together while we were engaged, moving all our stuff. And we had an Airbnb that did really well. We ended up selling that property to buy another rental property. And we got out of the Airbnb game mm-hmm. after that.
Is Airbnb more like a job? That is my question. How much of a job is it?
So you can make it passive, but then it's just a rental, like, right. and just regular rental property. Don't Airbnb it.
Yeah. That's what I'm trying to do with my basement of my house hack, is decide if I want to keep it as a regular rental or if I want to do the Airbnb game in the basement. It just seems like a lot of coordination.
If you have the time, do it. If you don't, then don't. No, I wouldn't do it if I were you.
Yeah. Just I have negative amounts of time most days.
No, don't do it.
You just look at your to-do list and you're like, let's figure out what's not happening today.
Yeah, that's the right way to do it.
But you didn't really like the short-term game, probably.
The money was great, but it didn't associate directly with my goal. As in, I want to be home every day by 1 o'clock. I like to be with my family. I like to go do whatever we want. Mm-hmm. This is really funny. I pride myself on being a good husband. Mm-hmm.
Like, that's not funny. That's awesome. Because I think it's really sad when people like don't try to be a better spouse for your like person. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
No, like for me, it's like, how high can I place this bar? So if I die, she never gets remarried.
So selfish reasons not to be like, oh, she'll enjoy this.
It's like 100%. Let's just,
you'll never remarry because I'm awesome.
Yeah. That's let's just be honest here. That's 100% why I'm doing it.
It depends on the lifestyle you're trying to build. So like knowing your why is important. So if you're trying to get your time back and you're trying to like be a good husband and you're trying to quit your work day by 1 o'clock, then having less houses, not short-term rentals and not flipping is the most passive game. But I think people get caught up in the idea of like flipping houses and doing Airbnb. Like Airbnb was all the rage pre-COVID for a minute. Like yeah, every like, Facebook group was Airbnb.
It's good. But when you identify your goal, Airbnb just doesn't fit in my goal. Right. And so, yeah, like it just didn't fit in my real estate goal. So I want to be home by like 12, 1 o'clock every single day. Mm-hmm. And it just didn't fit into that. Right.
Right.
And, you know,
I think it might be fun someday if I don't have my W-2 job, because you kind of have to be like almost like a, not a travel agent, but like a, like tourism manager. Like these are the fun mm-hmm. sites to go see. And this is like... Yeah, but so my house would be perfect location wise, but I'm like, I need time and bandwidth to do it how I'd want to do it and brand it well and make it all pretty. And, you know,
so we did it really cool. We ended up recording ourselves to the most commonly asked questions.
Oh, like, that's cool.
How do I, like every question that we got more than a couple of times, we recorded ourselves answering it or doing it or showing it. These are the restaurants. These are the breakfasts. These are the bars. These are this. This is that. Like, this is how you get to the house. Like, so we recorded a lot of those so that we wouldn't have to be answering that all the time. It was like, here's a library of questions. If it doesn't fit in there, reach out to me. If it does, then just click on it and you'll see the video.
That's so cool. Yeah. Where'd you put all your videos? Just like on, do you have like a YouTube channel for your house or did you just?
We sent it to them. So that was part of email. The welcome packet. They got an email that had all the videos.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's such a fun idea. Like a little extra personal touch.
Yeah.
I haven't been to an Airbnb yet that has done that. So
there you go.
Very interesting. Mm-hmm. And then I always talk about people's like personal money. Do you guys like, I bet your wife is probably like really tightly managing that, but yeah. Because do you guys keep debt? Like, how do you guys look at that? Like, do you keep car payments, student loans? Like, where are you guys at with that? I always like to see how people yeah. feel.
So let's just get down to the dirty. We have no car debt. We have no consumer debt. We have no debt that doesn't pay us. Our yeah. RV is paid off in cash. My truck is paid off in cash. My wife's mm-hmm. car is paid off in cash. Our rental properties have debt because they pay us. So I'm yep. okay with that debt.
Exactly.
We carry... over $150,000 in cash at all times, because we have a family and we have a little guy. So, we always have that amount of cash. And then we put all our monthly expenses on credit cards for the points. And then mm-hmm. we always pay them all off at the end of the month. And what else? We have three businesses that handle our rental portfolio that mm-hmm. each have typically over 5,000 in each one of those. And we allow ourselves $5,000 typically as a family to spend monthly, going out to eat, family stuff, just everything. During Christmas, we went like 6,500. We usually don't do that, but that's okay. Yeah. It's Christmas. But we did about, we do about $3,000 to $5,000 a month typically in family expenses. We Does don't that include deny your ourselves. Mortgage? Do what?
Does that include your mortgage?
No.
Okay.
My mortgage is paid off by my rental
property. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
Yeah.
So your primary residence is paid off by your rental. So you don't count yes. that as your like family expenses. Okay.
Yeah. Even our bills are paid by the companies. So like our light bill, water bill, phone bills, all that's paid off.
Yep.
My wife has a really large allowance.
Yeah. I was going to say this allowance is sweet. Like I need to get to that level because yeah. Because so, mine's like 6,000 and I save like half of it. And then I'm like, gets real sad by the end.
But remember, we don't have a Roth IRA. Or no, that's a lie. We do have a Roth IRA. I have $60,000 in my Roth. She has about 30. That's just invested. Mm-hmm. We then have, but that does include like our insurance and that kind of stuff too. That's on those credit cards as well.
Yeah.
So that's how that works. What other investments do we have? I just had a bunch of crypto and I just sold all that.
Okay, let's talk about it because your favorite thing to harass me about is what I feel about Bitcoin. So this is where me and Felipe differ on our investing strategies. I hate crypto.
Wait, like, I want to know first off how you feel about my finances. I just told you like my underwear, basically. Like,
yeah, literally. There we like opened the underwear drawer and got that was like talked it all the way through.
That was
I'm like shocked how much cash you carry. Like Why? Mind blown because I carry like nothing, and you would think it'd be opposite.
Yeah. Really? But, you think it's too much?
So did you say 150,000 cash?
Well, right now we have 177, but yes, 150 usually.
I've never had that much money cash in my life.
Well, I really respect your opinion. So that's why I wanted to know.
No, I think that's awesome. I mean, to me, you're cash heavy. Like I would be investing that somewhere or put it into like at least like a brokerage account. But I mean, also it's whatever, like you're growing your portfolio and scaling and you're pretty much like, do you consider yourself like financially independent now with your rentals, your real estate? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm like, there's no point in like, for me, it'd be stupid to carry that much cash because I should be investing it somewhere because I need to be scaling. You're kind of there. So you can do whatever you want. If it makes you sleep at night, like that's to the point once you hit FI, like in my mind at that point, it's like whatever makes you comfortable and sleep well at night, because at this point, like you kind of made it. And so you can do what you want. If like you and your wife know that you're going to sleep soundly and you're going to feel great about your son and your family with 150 in the bank, knock yourself out. I would think that'd be really cash heavy given that you spend like 6,000 a month. So because in theory you keep like a year of expenses is like a solid amount of things, like maybe even two, but that would be like half of that.
So so the house that's paid off that has a line of credit on it.
Mm-hmm.
If something ever happened to me, my wife, that would be her like nest. That'll be her $2,000 every single month.
Right.
Plus our.
Do you keep term life insurance on yourself?
No.
So I would get a term life insurance policy that's like $300 a year that would do the same thing. And then you can use that cash for something else.
Oh, there you go. I didn't know about that.
Yeah. You should have term life insurance policies on each of you, not whole life, term life. It's really cheap. Like I carry. I think I have like 800,000 on my ex, and then which I'm going to keep because at least it'll help Sloan, like our daughter. And then I keep like $1 million on myself. So like if anything happened to both of us, like she's good, all the mortgages can be paid. So I keep that much term life on each of us to like, essentially it would replace me if I died. So like my income, if you invested that at a 6% like growth rate or 6 or 7%, the income would replace my income. So it'd be like, she's gone, but we got this like payout and we invested it. And now we like get that income. So
the reason that I'm always so cash heavy, and I love podcasts because it's super deep and interest and like the real reasons, we grew up with nothing.
Right.
So like over $100 in the bank was like, oh my gosh, we have like
a rope. So how do you feel about finances? Do you feel like you have too much cash? What does your wife think?
Good questions. So I'll start from the top and then move my way down. So my fear, my biggest fear, honestly, is that like, is my trust in the Lord or is the trust in my money? Mm-hmm. And that's always my struggle. Mm-hmm. So I try to balance that.
Right.
Step down. My wife is, she's super trusting in me. She completely agrees with what we're doing. So she thinks we're great. Mm-hmm. Now me, I want to buy land and build a ginormous house. That's it. So I'm going to leverage that.
When you build a ginormous house, you fill it with stuff that you don't even want. You're like, what? Like, I have all these rooms that I like, you have this urge to like put stuff in.
Yeah. So
but again, like I grew up totally different. So this is like I grew up in the big house.
I grew up in a mobile home. So like I shared a bedroom, right? Mm-hmm. So like, okay. So when I say ginormous, you're going to laugh. I really just want a 4-bedroom with a bonus, and a 2-car
garage. How many square feet?
Under 2,500.
Okay. So you're not thinking ginormous. Like I was thinking like 6,000 square feet in my head when you said ginormous. I'm like thinking like,
we have different ideas. Uh-huh.
Okay. So this is so interesting. One of my friends went through marriage counseling and they were talking about like looking for houses and like, I want a nice house in like a neighborhood. And they're like, what is a nice house? And they defined like square footage and dollar amount. And they were light years apart. Yeah. And it's so interesting what people think is like a ginormous house and like a big investment in a home is different based on like your perspective. So
ours will be,
because that's like perfect. Like I like that's like my dream house size is that square footage. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what we want. We'll probably have to drop like $100,000, to kind of like get all that started.
Right.
And that'll put me right under about 75K and then I'll just build it back up and be fine.
Yep. And I think you'll be fine. Go get term life insurance policies on yourselves and then you won't be worried about depleting your cash.
There you go.
That's my words of advice. And also get it now while you're like healthy and young, because when you're old and you have pre-existing conditions, you can't do it then. So you like need to do it now before you have stuff.
Makes sense.
We all get stuff. So do it because it's cheaper if you do it now. So, and then like if anything happens to you or your wife, like you don't have to worry about the stress of money when like one of you passes away, because like you have like this gift from the person that passed and like you're grieving and you can just like be in the grief process. You're not like worried about having 37 mortgages. Like you're taken care of. I don't know.
So I think I would do it so that my wife wouldn't have to get remarried.
You're like, you don't need a sugar daddy. Here you go. Here's a big pile of cash. You're welcome.
That's funny. Yes.
And then you can scale back up to your 150K and then you can also take a giant policy out on yourself and you're like, here you go. You're welcome.
That's funny.
You need no one. Go sit in our pretty house with our son. Yes. And
you're good.
Don't get remarried.
Yes.
You're going to go take out like a $2 million of life insurance. So
now I am. She'll be fine.
Let me know. Yeah. So you've like so much money. You won't know what to do. There Not you. So much that like guys come knocking on our door though.
Right. It has to be like that. Like they're scared of her money. That's so funny.
The perfect amount. Yeah. Yes. Enough for her to get like a beach house on like a private island with no men around.
There you go.
So with rental like numbers, do you ever like, you just care about cash flow mostly. So what are your thoughts on like the cash on cash return stuff that gets so much high? Like, do you even, I don't care.
I don't care either. I don't look at ROI. I don't look at cash on cash. I don't look at 1%. I don't look at none of that.
Do you make the 1% rule though on most years?
Oh yeah. I blow that out of the water. Yeah. I know.
Making it.
Sure. But I just don't, it doesn't define my purchase by any means. So I give it no attention.
Right. And the reason, if you're hitting that cash flow number, you're probably at the 1% rule. 100%. Because you're converting a single family home into 2 units. You're hitting it.
That's how I'm hitting it. But like I said, I don't look at that because my goal is just cash flow. Yep. So does the property cash flow what I want it to cash flow? And that's really
because cash on cash will do nothing to give you the life you want.
Not at all. And net worth won't either.
Yeah. Right? Net worth is fun to track so I can watch my little chart go up, and because I'm nerdy and it brings me joy. Like, I only do it as a personal, like, yay, and a benchmark to be like,
but that's it.
That used to be negative at one point and here we are. But yeah. Other than that, it doesn't mean anything. But
exactly. And I think cash flow is the only way to really, that you should really be measuring like your wealth. Because at the end of the day, we do know that the dollar is depreciating in value. So mm-hmm. your cash on cash might be something this year, but it's going to look different 5 years down the road. Mm-hmm. But cash flow is the only thing that will forever go up.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. I love cash flow. I love that. And it definitely makes you think a lot more because it just, it aligns with the goals, the freedom part. So if you're kind of here for that piece, I think that's the most important. And people get so caught up in cash on cash. Paula Pant said that cash on cash looks better if you love debt. Like, the more debt you take on, the better it looks, because if you couldn't like finance the entire thing, it's going to be like infinite returns and all of this, and it really doesn't. Yep, so I'm a big hater of the cash on cash returns, so I think that's funny.
Yep. I have there's a guy in my mastermind that's all he looks at is, what is the cash on cash return on this? Like, how much money am I making on my
money?
Such
a buzzword right now.
Yeah. And I'm like, dude, you do realize that you can have even negative cash flow on a positive cash on cash return based on that investment. And yeah. He's like, yeah, but my net worth goes up. I was like, can you pay your bills with net worth?
No.
What's,
does he even know his why? Like his, yeah.
I just don't argue. I'm like, okay, that's fine. Whatever.
Don't let him talk to me because I'll just be rude.
Oh my gosh. I'm just like, okay, whatever. That's fine.
Sometimes I feel like cynical slightly. So. Yeah. Yeah, especially with like crypto. Like I just, yeah.
Okay, so let's get to that real quick. Okay. Bitcoin mm-hmm. is a very skeptical play.
It is.
But if you know that it's skeptical, why not play on the skeptic? Is that the word?
If I had $150,000 in the bank, I'd play with crypto too.
What I mean,
I'm sitting on like I was excited today when I looked at my bank account and it had $6,000. That's my checking. I keep some money, not a lot, in my business account too. So like I could replace all furnaces and water heaters this year if I had to. That's how much I keep in the business.
Okay. I told you to buy Bitcoin when it was $4,000. It is mm-hmm. at $34,000 right now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
With what money? I have like negative amounts of money. Now I'm at least like break even.
you could have bought it. So right
but
now.
You're, okay. So I guess for people that are listening, if you are in a solid position and you have discretionary money to spend, you can do things like Bitcoin, but no, I was not in a position.
Now, to do that. Right now, I would say
right now,
do not buy Bitcoin. Right now, do not buy Bitcoin or nothing. Right now, sell anything you have and wait because it's going to bust.
Which is why you never buy it from the Sarah perspective, because we don't time the market over here. You ever think, should I buy or sell today? Like, you're doing it wrong in my book. Like, that's just like, it shouldn't even be a question.
Okay, let me ask you this. Are you ever going to sell real estate?
Maybe. I thought about selling my duplex, but it would be a very emotional decision. Said, I'm trying not to do that.
You just said that you don't time the market.
Well, I wouldn't time it. I'd get rid of it for something that cash flows better.
I still don't think that's a good idea.
Why?
Because the time you invested in it, you can never get back. You're valuing a property based on numbers and not your why. I would never.
Well,
ever,
I mean, like emotionally, I hate my duplex right now, but on paper, it cash flows like crazy.
Is your goal cash flow?
Yes. Like if it was remodeled, like if it was like, okay, so when you become a private money lender and give me $80,000.
What is like Sarah's goal?
Cash flow.
That's not a good goal.
Well, my goal is, so I really want to spend more time with my daughter. And right now I have a job that I love, but it involves travel and I really want to be present for her. Like I want the lifestyle of like getting up, hanging out with her, like going to a coffee shop and like being like in the middle of the day, like a Tuesday afternoon. And we're like at the coffee shop and we go to the park and people are like, does she like not work? And it's like, what does your husband do? Like nothing. I finance myself and I don't have to work. Like that's kind of the dream, is to get everything automated. But I also just like find real estate so much fun. Like I love I like finding tenants. Like I like how developing relationships with them. Like I just love real estate. And so doing it, like if I had like 10 properties to manage and it paid for my day job and I could like spend half the day at a coffee shop and half the day at a park and like take care of my people, my like 10 families, that would be the dream. Is so you're kind of like giving back to the community in a way.
Yeah. So your goal is not cash flow. Your goal is time.
Yeah.
So what I would challenge you to do is give every hour of your day a financial value amount and then buy real estate based on that. So if you're like, okay, my 8 to noon is worth $400 every single day or $100 every single day, buy a rental property that's going to cover that. And now you have a goal as to why you're buying real estate, not just I'm buying real estate for cash flow. Mm-hmm. I'm buying real estate to buy back my mornings.
Yeah.
I'm buying real estate to buy my afternoons. I'm buying to buy my evenings. Mm-hmm. So now you can decide whether that duplex that you have is actually positively or negatively affecting that goal.
It would positively affect it. Like I know it's, and it also, it fits like two of my goals. It cash flows well. And so it buys back my time and it buys back more of my time than any other property that I have. Like it will be a good investment.
Does it take up your time? Do you have to go and like be there all the time?
No, because there's no one in it right now. So I have three properties that are rented right now. So my house hack and then my two other single family homes. And I've been to each of them once this year.
That's great. That's perfect. Now your duplex, you have to say, you know, how much time did it take up this year? Not how much cash flow did it make? And that's
It made nothing. Well, that's a lie. It made like 2 months of rent. It made like $1,000 this year or something ridiculous. And then it didn't really take up much time. I mean, I went out and got windows quoted for it. That's about all I've done this year for it.
So maybe you do got to sell it and buy another single family home because it sounds like your single family homes are really easy.
There's nothing hard about it. It's just emotionally makes me really angry.
So get rid of it, sell it and buy a single family home.
But I'm like, but it meets like my other goals or, if I didn't just go through like a hellish year.
Or because 1031 exchange it into a single family home like you have now.
I could, but it's not worth anything like right now. That's the dilemma. Okay, so it's like, it's gutted. Like what, neither side is rentable as is. And so I would take a big loss on it right now to get rid of it. But if I go through the hassle of fixing it up, I might as well keep it. Because it cash flows well. And so it's in a like C neighborhood, which is my only C property. And there's a need in this specific school district for affordable housing. And I really like the idea of like helping people get a nice quality house in an area that's really hard to afford. So even though it's a bad location, I think I'd be like giving people like a really good opportunity to like have their kids go to a good school. So I like the like community aspect around this one. Mm-hmm. So like, I think it'd make a good, like, I like the impact. I like the people that would want it because they're going to be so excited to get this property at that price point in this school system.
There you go.
I don't know. That's my like touchy feely reason I bought the house. But like, I think once this year settles down, I'll feel better about it because I'm just bitter. Because I bought that house by myself. Like my ex was on house arrest at the time and he couldn't go see it. And I literally walked it myself and bought it. And like, I picked that house and it's terrible and it drives me nuts. But I feel like me and that house have like a thing. So yeah, I kind of want to like see it through to the end, but I don't know if I'm just stubborn or if it's like a valid thing. So I have a couple investors that I want to walk through it and see what they think of it, who like thought about buying it and just see what they think. Because I've walked a couple people through it and they're like, this is horrible. What are you thinking? And then I've walked another person through it that's like, this makes total sense. I get what you're doing. So it's just hard.
I get it.
The only reason, so I haven't told this story yet, but I probably will by the time this podcast episode airs. So the reason I'm mad at it is I sourced everything off Facebook Marketplace to, did I tell you this yet? I sourced everything off of Facebook Marketplace to renovate the property. I had flooring, showers, surrounds, toilets, vanities, like like I like drove all over the world, like sourcing, like scrapping together this house. Like that was like my like winter project that I like did for like several months. I got like fridges, stoves, and I had everything to do the good side. And then some of it to start the other side of the duplex, because there's one that's like really rough and there's one that's pretty good. And so I had all this stuff. And right around the time that my life started to unravel, I was like, hey, like he's not going to work on the property, so I'm going to hire a contractor. And so I had a contractor walk through it and quote it all out. And so we had just the right amount of money off our tax return because we have rentals and we spent a shitload of money last year. And so we had this money sitting there and I was going to do the good side. And a week before my contractor started, I went to walk him through it one more time and all of the stuff was gone. And he went to the property apparently like a week before and took everything and like locked it in a trailer.
What?
And so I was like, I don't have money anymore to like start over buying all the stuff I've sourced, like 1,000 square feet of flooring, windows, like.
Where's all this stuff at?
In a trailer, just sitting in the driveway at our old primary residence.
And he won't give it to you?
Mm-mm. We've asked. We asked early in the beginning because I was like, I am paying for the mortgages on the properties right now and paying for the real estate business. And we're cash flow negative right now because that's unoccupied. And if I could just get one side up, we'd be cash flow positive. And he said he acknowledges that he's aware of the stuff and he would like to talk about what he would want to do with that at a later date. So I put like $200 of my own money every month into the business to like maintain a flat level of cash because that property is just sitting there and I turned off like all the utilities. Like it doesn't have water, electric, gas, anything. Like it's just shut down, just waiting for this divorce to be final so I know what to do with it.
Jeez, good luck. That's terrible.
So I'm just personally very mad at this house and the fact that I have to rebuy everything again because it just takes a lot of time. And so I haven't rebought anything yet. I'm just like in this holding pattern to like see what happens, because I'm like, is he going to return this trailer of stuff? Like, what is he going to do with toilets and vanities and stuff? Like, I am getting all the rentals in the divorce. Like, what are you going to do with that? And then also, if he returns it, will it be like in the condition I bought it in? We've hit a lot of good topics though, because we kind of walked through like you scaling up your business and then way deep on the personal finances, which I find fascinating.
Yep.
My takeaway from this podcast will be that I need to save more money up and like hold it. So that's what you need to go get term life insurance, and I need to stop running myself so lean on cash. Go to Felipe if you want crypto advice and stock choosing, and then talk to me if you want the most boring strategy in the world that works.
There you go.
The get rich slow. That's
fair. But I have 170. What?
Yeah. I think I have like, I think everything together, I have like 18,000.
There you go.
Cash, but I have like $100,000 in like 401ks, and then I have real estate, and yeah,
you're doing fine.
I'm doing fine. Mm-hmm. We're gonna. How I guess also, how old are you? Have we ever? 29. You're what?
29.
Yeah. See, I feel like I'm like failing at life when I talk to you.
Why?
I'm 31.
No, you're fine.
Yeah. So Felipe is 29 with $170,000 in the bank, and I have no excuse because, yeah.
You have no excuse.
No excuses. That's the goal for 2021.
No excuse.
I'm going to end up like at least 3Xing my portfolio this year. The last question I ask everybody is just a really simple, I don't know if you've listened before, but my question is about outsourcing. So I started this podcast in 2020 and I really made it a point to stop working in my business and in my life on things that didn't bring me joy. So if I didn't like mowing my own lawn, I was going to outsource that and just like find some other way to do it to buy back my time, which actually fits in really well with our conversation because we've been talking about buying back time a lot.
Yep.
So what do you outsource in your life? Like what do you love to get rid of and have done?
So me and my wife outsource a lot of the cooking. Mm-hmm. My wife does still cook a lot, but less. She doesn't cook every single meal.
Mm-hmm.
And we've realized that that gives us a lot of time back with our family and with our son.
Yes.
Because a lot of people forget. Everyone's like, oh, well, it takes 30 minutes to cook. No, it doesn't. You have to go buy the food. You have to cook the food. You have to clean. You have to clean after. Like there's a lot that
goes. The cleanup is the worst part. Like I can make the food all day if someone like, if there's like a magician that comes in and like does my dishes for me.
Exactly. So we either eat out, buy our food, or have it pre-made by a cook. So I do have a question before we jump off here. I know it's getting late, but
yeah, sorry.
You said that you don't believe in credit repair.
I do not believe in credit repair.
So I do. Mm-hmm. So I was wondering why you don't, and then I'll say why I do.
Okay. I think credit repair is stupid because I feel really strongly about this. I've also had people like block me because I'm like, I'm not talking about credit repair because this is stupid. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think of an analogy for this. Like, credit is like a symptom. It's like the symptom of the problem. It's not the problem. Like, your credit score is like a secondary thing to like your shit being mismanaged. And so I said shit like 27 times this episode. I don't know where. I've just had a long week. Usually I clean it up for the podcast. Anyway, because like that's like a secondary thing. Like, a score is just like a wellness. Like, how are you doing? So I feel like if you get your financial house in order and do like clean up debt and make a plan and like prioritize like smallest to largest or interest rate, like just pick a plan and do it, I think your credit will reflect you doing good things. And so I don't think you need like repair your, like, I don't like the idea of credit repair because I think there are bad companies out there that take advantage of people with credit repair and say, we're going to fix your credit, but they let your debts go into collections and they try to settle them for a lower cost. And I think you lose some dignity in doing that when you settle for like less. I think there's really good character that gets built by digging yourself out of the hole you made. And so I kind of feel like two different ways about it. So I'm like, I don't know why people focus on like the credit repair because like the number doesn't need repaired. The number's just like, hey dude, you're doing a really shitty job over here. Like, you should probably like get on a budget. So that's my, does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And okay. I totally get that. But there is a place where the single mom or the single dad has to buy a vehicle because of the divorce. And now he doesn't have a car and he doesn't have the right credit. And he's going to spend his last $1,000 on either trying to get this loan for this car that he's not going to get because the loan is not due because of his credit, or he can pay a credit repair company to fix his credit. And then 2 months down the road, he can now get that truck to get his kid to school because his credit allows him that loan now. One right. example. Two, yeah. Real estate investors, we get to hit our credit all the time, sometimes unfairly when we're trying to get loans. So mm-hmm. we can remove all those inquiries that you probably sometimes can't. Another example, third example. I just bought a truck, right? Mm-hmm. I did put a loan on it and then I paid it off. That doesn't fall off for a year, but my credit repair company took it off in 2 months. So that is why Diego and I are out to change the narrative on credit repair companies. You're right. The masses can fix their credit on their own and they should.
Yeah. But there's always exceptions to every rule.
Exactly. There is,
but also like my day job is like, I make a living off the gray zone. So I feel you. Like, you would essentially doing the same thing. Like, you make the living off of the exception cases, like people that truly need it, which is just the minority of people.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like a lot of times it's like, oh, you need credit repair because you don't manage your credit, your finances right. That may be true in most, but it's mm-hmm. not true in all. Right.
Like, where I live, I've found through screening tenants that there's like a pretty predatory, some kind of company around here that clearly markets somewhere, because I've ran into several tenants that just have the worst credit scores because they've signed up for a credit repair program that's let all their debts go into collections with the goal of settling them. And it just ruins people's credit. Like, their on-time payment history is trash because the point of them like repairing your credit is just like cleaning up your debt at a discount. But they just do a really bad job of it.
No, and so what we
it's
do
gonna be
is
hard.
We like, and we've helped some people already. What we do is we look for irregularities in your credit score. So like, if across the board, across the three bureaus, it's not completely accurate, that's grounds for dismissal on that credit inquiry. If the dates don't match up, if the name is not right, if whatever the case may be, it needs to get knocked off because it's not uniform across the board. We look, I mean, there's, we can remove just about anything that hits your credit that is an irregularity, we can definitely remove. On top of that, no, we don't make things go into collection. That's super crazy.
Yeah. Isn't that insane though? But that's like a real thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, that's just not how we do it at all. So we're out to change the narrative on that.
Right. Which I think is a noble goal because there are people that need help, but then it's hard to be like as long as people are careful about like, oh, I need to repair my credit to get an auto loan, to take my kid to school. Like you need to get it repaired to like a minimum level to like keep digging yourself out. Like, I don't know. But again, like, also, I grew up with a very different like life experience where I feel like you've seen probably more where like your mom could have really benefited, for example. And so like, this right. is your so personal like passion. Yeah.
My mom could have benefited from this, for example, at that exactly. point, right? Where she had to live off of credit cards for about a year because of my dad. And then she spent the next 3 years fixing her credit.
After going through divorce, I would entertain this idea more because it like rocked my world and I was in a real solid spot before it happened.
So, like if my mom could have fixed her credit 3 years before that, maybe she wouldn't have had to wait 3 years to buy a house. But, and like me and you know, if she would have fixed her credit, bought a house or bought another investment property or whatever 3 years sooner, mm-hmm. then prices wouldn't have gone up. She would have got rent that whole time. Mm-hmm. And all for a $750 credit repair company. That's legit. Yeah. Right. So like,
I also have a hard time thinking that people like in debt who are struggling need to like pay a company to fix their stuff. Mm-hmm. That's the only like other, because I'm like, people get really desperate and they'll use it and there's just good ones and bad ones. So it's gonna be really hard to differentiate yourself in the space, I think.
That makes sense. Yep.
But I think you and Diego, like when you meet you guys, like you're very genuine people. So I think you could do well.
There you go.
I just
send people that need credit repair our way.
Thank you so much, Felipe, for your time tonight. I appreciate you. Sorry we talked a really long time. My podcast editor will hate us, but here we are. But we always have a good time talking and it's good to pick your brain. But I think people will really enjoy this episode because I hope we got some really good nuts and bolts in there to kind of show you what's possible. Agreed. So
absolutely. No, thank you for having me.
So, and I look forward to listening to your episodes too, because you and Diego are doing awesome things.
Yes. Diego and I are starting a podcast together, Rat Race to Financial Independence.
I was very excited to learn about this. Yeah. Because so I'm a big fan of like everyone doing podcasts because I drive a lot. And so it's handy. Like I just want all my friends to have podcasts. This is great.
Yeah. So Diego and I are starting a podcast called the, Rat Race to Financial Independence. And our slogan, and we haven't finished it yet, but it's going to have the word diversify, right? Mm-hmm. So like diversity, diversify, but mm-hmm. like diverse and then FI.
Yeah.
So we'll use that as our slogan.
That's perfect. Yeah.
And that was an idea that like me and my wife had like at, I don't know, 10 o'clock at night. And I texted Diego and he was like, great idea. Let's implement. Mm-hmm. He can run with it. So you need, I think personally.
And there's such a need for that. Like exactly that niche. Yeah. Yes, you're going to kill it.
Exactly. I think we're going to do okay. I think.
Just you guys on the podcast, are you going to interview people? Like what's your game plan for it?
Yeah. Great question. So we want a very Joe Rogan meets real estate investing style podcast where we're going to interview other people, ourselves as well, but we're going to interview other real estate investors that is very non-conventional approach. If you listen to a lot of the bigger podcasts out there, it's a lot of the same, and excuse the wording, but it's like the same white guy with the same story of how he acquired a bajillion properties.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh my God, I'm so tired of hearing that story. Like, mm-hmm. what about the Diego Corzo, who's a DACA recipient, who every 2 years has to reapply to be a citizen or to be in the country and still has $1 million net worth, has over 20 rental properties. And every 2 years, he doesn't know if he's going to be able to stay in the country. And he's still investing in real estate. He's still pulling loans. Like, how are you pulling loans that way? How are you a realtor? How are you making, $500,000 a year as a realtor? Like,
yeah,
that's the stories that I want to hear mm-hmm. and how that was not the, I bought, 50 units last year, and my dad's a hedge fund manager. It's like, you didn't have it hard, dude. Like there's not a story there.
Yeah.
Or like you.
Well, I didn't have it hard, but I would want
to interview
crap kicked out of me in the last year. So I've developed some street cred all of a sudden.
I'd want to interview you, a divorced mom with a toddler baby who's got, how many units do you have now?
Well, if I count my, so I'd have six.
So that has six units, built out a basement so that she could live for free, so that her and her daughter don't have to worry about at least their mortgage. Like,
right.
That's an
interview. And my like world imploded because I had her 100% of the time. I have her 100% of the time still.
I don't know how you do it. I really don't. I don't know how you do it.
It's not a lot of sleep. And yeah, like, so I get like, the only time I don't have her, like, I have her like, well, I work a full-time job. And so I have daycare and like childcare. And then like twice weekly, she gets supervised visits with the other parent. And so for like 2 hours, I get time where I don't have to work a full-time job that I can just do me. And so I record podcasts on like my, like hour and like my 4 hours a week that are just mine.
I don't know how you do it.
And I do everything during nap time. She's a really good napper and that saves my life. Like for 3 hours, I'm the most productive human you've ever seen.
You changed the world in 3 hours.
Literally. Like I'm like, I caulked an entire basement in 3 hours.
Oh gosh. That's
my mom and dad about had an intervention with me though when I was finishing the house hack because my like contractor quit and I was like 2 weeks from like my tenant moving in. And I was just a hot mess. And I was up to like 2 or 3 in the morning for like 2 weeks straight. And they were like, you have to like stop this. I'm like, I will on November 1st.
So almost there.
You just have to make it there.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And those are the stories that I want to hear on the podcast. And I think Joe Rogan does a great,
his you podcast know is excellent. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought he was like a meathead drug addict, like whatever.
Yeah.
And then I heard it and I was like, this dude's like intellectual,
very
research. He does shrooms, so I'm a little confused.
Yeah, but I don't know that. I didn't know that. Fun fact. Yeah.
And I'm like, but he's very, very smart, and he has a conversation. And I think most podcasts, including the one that I used to do, are very structured and don't go this way too much, don't go that way too much, don't say Republican, don't say Democrat, like very like that. And I'm
I vote like, according to who will affect my real estate taxes. We'll leave it at that. So where all can they find you? We're all.
Sure. Everyone can find me on Instagram at Felipe Mejia, REI. That's going to be the best place to find me. And then from there we can connect.
Sounds good. And your, does Rat Race to FI have its own Instagram?
It does.
Instagram?
It has its own Instagram. Rat yep. Race to FI. Yep.
Yep. And then your partner in that is, we'll just shameless plug for Diego as well. Diego. Do you know Corzo. His handle?
Yes. Real Diego Corzo.
Yes, he's a good guy to follow. So we'll do a little plug. He'll get, you get brownie points for me and for him today.
There you go.
So awesome. Well, have a good night, everybody. Thank you, Felipe, so much for this interview.
Hey, friend, I'm Sarah, and welcome to the Nerd's Guide to Financial Independence podcast. I am here to show you that financial independence can be for anyone who wants it badly enough, and that investing in real estate doesn't have to be scary, take a vast DIY knowledge, or involve heaps of debt. When I am not sharing my own progress to FI, I'll be picking the brains of fellow like-minded, debt-conscientious investors. I am so glad that you are here, my fellow aspiring retirees.